The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host, guest, random reptoid, or chupacabra may not necessarily reflect those of AM 950 Radio, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Now, it's time to step into the unknown. There are things people experience but never talk about. A shadow moving in the corner, flickering of the lights, a disembodied voice. We invite you to talk with us. Share your story, share your experience. Because this isn't just your story, this is our story. This is Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken.
And this is Ghost Box Radio on AM 950, where every night we talk about the paranormal, ufology, Bigfoot, and so much more. Happy Monday, everybody. My name is Greg Bakken. Thank you for joining me, and happy Thanksgiving week as a lot of us are getting ready for our big turkey dinners and whatnot. And if you don't celebrate Thanksgiving, I'm hoping that you're able to spend time with families and friends because it's a fun time. I love this time of November in general. So I have to tell you something I didn't realize, that they still exist. I teach a class every Monday about the paranormal. I do that with Char Savoy, who you may have heard on such programs as this one. And I needed to get gas for my truck, and we were running a little late with class, and I get over, and I'm in Anoka, and I go to the Sinclair there. And I've never been to a Sinclair before. It's you know, the gas station with the dinosaur on it. And I'll tell you, I get pull up, and this young man is just, like, right there. And I'm like, can I help you? And he's just like, do you want me to fill it up? And I didn't understand that. Because I was like, I mean, I haven't heard of that in years and years. I'm like, you want what? You want me to, what do you want? And he's like, you want me to fill it up? I'm like, oh, okay, that's what we're doing here. Yeah, I didn't know you existed. And they were actually closed when I showed up. So they were actually giving me gas, and they were kind of staying open for me. I really felt like I had no idea what I was doing, quite frankly. Showing up at the gas station when they're closed, they're filling up my tank. I mean, to the point I had no idea what to do, where I'm at the end, I'm like, do you need a tip? I mean, I don't know how to even handle these situations. You know, for those who know me, you know I'm awkward to begin with. But even in situations like this, I really have no idea what to do. And he just looks at me and he's like, no. I mean, it was, as you could tell, it was a very stellar conversation. But thank you to them anyway for filling up the gas tank and putting up with my weirdness, like everyone else has to, unfortunately. You know, as we're into Monday, we thought we'd start with a light conversation about true crime in Minnesota. And the true crime part of it is that, first of all, I think when a lot of people think about true crime, like we had Jeff Mudgett on talk about H.H. Holmes, you know, we think about the big situations. But the thing that I find very interesting about what we're talking about tonight is, as you all know, you listen to my show, we talk about stuff like demonology. We talk about possession. We talk about things like that. And what is fun about listening to that stuff is that it could happen to, you know, that it, for some of you may listen to it and may not think it's real at all. And you're just like, well, this is interesting to listen to. It's not real anyway, so who cares? This stuff that we're talking about tonight is scarier to me than anything demonology, because this is really something when you have no idea what's going to happen. You know, when you stop somewhere or a police officer stops you. And I'm not trying to do like a defund the police sort of thing or anything like that. I'm just talking about cases that have happened in the past where there's somebody crooked in every sort of line of work. It doesn't matter. And somebody eventually gets killed. And that's what we're going to be talking about tonight with my guest, Joe Kistner, as we're talking about his pretty amazing podcast series, Shadows of the Midwest, which is, I'm looking about it on Apple Podcasts. I know it's on, I was listening to some of it on Spotify. It's all over the place. So let Joe tell us where else we can get it at. But I really wanted to bring Joe on and talk about this podcast. Joe, welcome to Ghost Box Radio.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate the invitation a lot. And let me tell you, I've always admired your work, too, going back to the KCOR days.
Oh, thank you.
And it was fun finding somebody from Minnesota to listen to on there. That was some good stuff. You've had some good interviews over the years.
Oh, thank you very much. And, you know, you got to be careful with that voice, Joe. They're going to replace me if enough people hear that voice, and they're all just like, that's the voice we're looking for on AM 950. So just watch it, okay? Just watch it. I'm watching you, Joe. Joe, you and I have we've known each other for a little while now, and this is something that I think we've been talking about doing for a while, and just haven't been able to get around to it. And I'm really excited to talk about it. And I feel like I'm not too far off of my comments about, you know, number one, the idea of, you know, that the idea of anything true crime is that we don't. It's kind of the normal becoming abnormal. It's the normal that is twisted, and sometimes we don't understand the reason why it's been twisted. And, I mean, really, none of these stories come out with the victim living, right?
Or missing.
Or missing, yeah.
I started out, well, long story, I ended up doing some things with my daughter. I did with this Minnesota Legend Hunters thing.
That's right.
And I tried to, it was fun. We did a lot of things on strange people, places, and things in the state of Minnesota.
Yep.
There's a Facebook page that I haven't paid attention to in a long time, unfortunately. My ambition was to publish a travel log about Minnesota involving that page. And with my ADHD, I said, well, what am I going to do after that? And ended up thinking true crime in Minnesota would be a fun thing or interesting thing to go through there. And one of the things that's always intrigued me about this stuff is missing persons cases. And missing persons cases brought me into some local stuff here. I'm out in McLeod County. A gentleman that went missing a few years ago. And that case transferred into, I've been helping a couple families from Becker County who have had missing loved ones back from mid-70s, 1975 with Milda McQuillan, and 1976 with the Rustness McKay disappearance. Both of them are very intriguing in themselves. Through some of those ventures, I ended up meeting, connecting with a doctor, Eric Grabowski from North Dakota, Dickinson State University, who runs a cold case web. And we thought we wanted to do something to generate interest in local things. This is a case that I discovered looking into those missing persons cases, and it intrigued me. And it's something that I thought would be something I could sum up in two or three episodes, and it turned out to be so much more.
Divert you for a second, I feel like that you have one chance, don't you, to kind of get it right. If you're presenting something, you kind of have like one chance. If you have all the evidence and information in front of you, you really can't skimp on it, can you? You have to really go the long haul on these stories.
Well, this what this first season, hopefully more seasons will come, of the Shadows of the Midwest. I call it Secrets of County Ditch Number 5.
Yep.
I don't know if you want to go into it yet, but we examine a case from southern Minnesota. I found the case and figured it was pretty much a done deal. I ended up getting the case file from the BCA, which was like 940 pages. And as you go through there trying to put the story together and putting some interviews together and stuff, a lot of other stuff emerged from it. And one of the things, too, I kind of pride myself in is hopefully having original research. And I want to bring you things that you haven't heard before, mm-hmm. that hasn't been repeated on some other podcast or true crime show. And like with the missing persons cases, I can take ownership in these things because it's I put a lot of work and thought into those things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's I mean, and that's kind of the way that anybody who's actually going to present any sort of information, right? They're going to get the facts, they're going to do whatever, or do or dig up new facts, and then you synthesize the information so that you can like you said, you could literally hang your hat on it and call this is what I've come up with for my podcast.
Surprisingly, though, there's a lot more successful podcasts that read newspaper articles.
Oh yeah,
you know. Oh, and it's kind of, you know, it's it is what it is, I guess.
It is, but it is unfair. And, you know, there is something, I think there's something very valid about what you're saying. It feels like because, like, we get to it a little bit later, the genre or whatever else, that there are favorites out there that people are listening to, which is fine, but they don't tend to always go after the other stuff. And that's where it's so hard to actually to be able to promote yourself in a way that you're actually going to get new listeners. And the way that it works for us is like it takes like one person that's really, you know, like socially, you know, evolved that can like share out what we're doing, and that makes a big difference. But it's tough, and it is really unfortunate when you do see that there are people who are, you know, they're not putting the effort in, and your quality of work, what you consider to be acceptable, is much higher than what's out there.
Well, thank you. This is all brand new to me. I've been on podcasts before talking about my missing persons cases and things, and some stuff about my Minnesota legend hunters type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's tough to go figure. But yeah, it's tough to get the word out there, and I wanted to do something original.
Yeah.
And something I could put my own name on.
Well, and I would assume too, for example, and what you're talking about here is Secrets of County Ditch number 5. And you know, I think saying that, no, in my opinion, maybe the true crime community would be like, absolutely, I know exactly what you're talking about, but this isn't something I know anything about. So when I've been listening to it, it's really incredible. And so with your most, not your most recent one, I didn't listen to, Solved or Resolved. I haven't listened to that one yet. I think where I was at was a sort of Homecoming, which was the one that came out in September. You know, you had why don't we do this? I don't want to jump ahead here, and I don't want to give anything away. I have about 2 minutes or so before we go to break. Can you give us kind of a quick overview on what is the Secrets of County Ditch number 5, at least kind of a starter?
Yeah, sure. It goes back to May of 1980, right outside Blue Earth, Minnesota, in Faribault County. Mm-hmm. Farmer Gilbert Sheevy went to check a drainage ditch north of his residence one morning after a heavy rainfall. And as he looked over the side of the road into the drainage ditch to see the corn stalks and stuff piling up and kind of blocking the water flow, he noticed what he thought was a blow-up doll mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. amongst the debris. And as he looked further, he realized that it was a human being. It was a young woman. Some of the more, well, not that it's curious enough to find a naked body in a drainage ditch. Some of the curious things were is that her head was shaved and all of her fingernails were removed. She was nude, and the only thing left was a cord around her neck. The body had been in there, they figured, for 4 or 5 days and started decomposition.
Which is why also bloated, looking like a blow-up doll, possibly. Yeah.
And that's where he kind of made the original mistake. In the first episode, I did get to talk to the sheriff, Sheriff Fletcher, mm-hmm. who was involved with the case, and a couple of one of the deputies that was there that helped investigate it, and then a firefighter who later became a deputy for Faribault County and was also a corrections officer. It was fun to get their insights to that day of what happened and the things that were going on. And then from that point, we kind of move on to the mystery of who she is, why she was there. And, you know, we're talking small town Minnesota, yeah. but it was, however, right off of I-90, a major thoroughfare. So we kind of examined some of the other things that were happening around 1980. I mean, we all think it was an age of innocence. I look back to 1980, and it pretty much was for me. However, I was, you know, 13 years old or so.
Yeah.
And we kind of examined some of the other things that were going on there. And surprisingly, there was just as much darkness and kind of heinous things going on back then as well mm-hmm. in the same general area of southwest Minnesota or southeastern Minnesota.
Unbelievable. I have so many questions about that. What I'd like to do, though, so we can get – so we have to do this so we could have more conversation. Let's go ahead and take our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this podcast, everything around it. It's going to be pretty incredible. Joe, if you could do me a favor to get us in a break, can you tell us that they're listening to Ghostbox Radio on AM 950, please, with your voice?
And you're listening to Ghostbox Radio on AM 950.
There we go. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Ghostbox Radio on AM 950. My name is Greg Bach, and thank you very much for joining us tonight. Tonight we are having a conversation about true crime in Minnesota, which is very exciting in the sense that, you know, as talking to Joe beforehand, that we don't really have – we haven't really been talking a lot of true crime, and let alone anything in Minnesota, which I'm really excited about. Joe Kistner, who is our guest tonight, his podcast is called Shadows of the Midwest, and we've been talking about a set of episodes from season one, Secrets of a County Ditch, County Ditch number 5. There's a lot of different episodes to it. I'm not going to give anything away here because I think you need to listen to it. But, you know, I think it's in episode 5 that you have a testimony or, you know, like an interview between cops and who they believe had been involved with it. Is that stuff public record? Did you have to get permission to get those? Those are actual recordings.
Yeah, I've learned, I had talked to you a long time ago about a case in St. Michael.
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of got my feet wet with records stuff and with the state of Minnesota. And basically, after anything is solved or after 30 years, the case file will become public record. I've had to bring out my inner litigator with some counties about that stuff. You'll remember a couple years ago with the Jacob Wetterling conviction.
Yeah.
All the files, excuse me, for Jacob Wetterling became public. And the Wetterling family wasn't very happy with that. And they ended up petitioning and got some of those files moved to the FBI. FBI missing persons cases files, from what they've told me, never become public. So some of those files from the Wetterling file were sealed away, but otherwise they're all available all to the media. And if you want to talk about a file, that one's thousands and thousands and thousands of pages long.
How many? I mean, like, imagine how many leads that they had received over the 30 years that case was open.
There was, yeah. I looked through some of it, and it was unbelievable. There was, yeah, I think each volume, and I think the volumes went up to like, had like 1,000 leads in them.
Wow. Do you?
But as far as.
Go ahead.
No, but as far as the recording goes, is the Faribault County Sheriff's Office was very gracious and stuff too. I went down there one afternoon or one morning, right before a snowstorm, and, was able to go through some of the records they have there. The BCA holds the lion's share of the files for that case because it ended up getting turned over to the BCA. But they had audio recordings, and it was kind of funny because I had my handheld tape recorder or my digital recorder, and I had a coaxial or a double male cable. So I basically, they played their micro cassette tape, and I transferred it right into my digital recorder, and I had no idea what I was actually getting. So I transcribed a couple of tapes because I had to get home because I had dogs that needed to be out, let out. And one of them, one of the recordings had nothing to do with this case, which was really disappointing. And the second recording was the one I played. I thought I was lucky. That was the final interview. I'll just kind of go into it. A very long, interesting story. A former state trooper, Minnesota state trooper, ended up, you might say, confessing to this crime.
Yeah.
And ended up serving time for the crime. So this interview was with the lead investigator for Faribault County, and the guy's name was Robert Nelson, this trooper. Yep. And in that final interview, he went through and described what he supposedly did the night that this hitchhiker, was what they called her, was murdered. And I've reached out. I've actually had some communication with Robert Nelson. And in the next episode will be basically a statement from Robert Nelson.
Wow.
He is 76 years old now. That was kind of interesting, too. I've had, for the most part, I've had really good luck when I've reached out to people and requested interviews. You know, and you're honest, I'm just a guy. I mean, I work for public transit, for God's sakes. But people, I've had very good and very fortunate to have people open up to me. Mm-hmm. My first messaging with Robert Nelson, the trooper, he's still in prison in Texas. And he basically told me to, gave me some parable about a pillowcase full of feathers and picking them up. And then basically told me to kiss off. He didn't want to talk to me again. But I couldn't do that. So I wrote him another email stating, you know, I understand your frustration. And I told him some of the information I knew about his life and the things that had happened since then. And then it made him curious. But I have to say the real, this is kind of a, I'm kind of digressing a little bit, a real synchronicity thing. I was talking to a cop who used to be a cop in Houston. His name was Kent McGowan. He served 20 years in prison for he executed an arrest warrant in 1992, ended up shooting a woman, and in 2002 they convicted him of murder. He went to prison. And right now he's done, and he's trying to exonerate himself. Mm-hmm. And I had a long conversation with him about potentially interview. And I told him about this case and Robert Nelson. And he either left me a message or called me the next day or something to tell me that he was living with a disabled vet on a ranch down in Texas. And he called to tell me that the guy he lives with was in the cell next to Robert Nelson for 20 years. And they were best buddies. And when I came back to Robert Nelson with that, I said, hey, do you remember this guy? And it's like something tripped in him. And then he said, you know what? I don't believe in coincidences.
Nope.
And the fact that this happened, that you brought this, a buddy of mine for 20 years, so, you know, next door to each other, he said, there's got to be something more to this. So he pretty much opened the floodgates. So that was kind of one of those weird synchronicity type things. I tend to call it a God moment, because I really think there was something divine in the whole thing. But
it's just too random to be a coincidence, you know, just incredible.
And I've had such good luck with things like that. And like I said, getting people to share things. So I'm looking forward to giving Robert Nelson's statement. I offered to phone interview him or interview him over the phone. and he turned it down because he said he is 76 years old right now, and he's got really hard time hearing, especially on the phone. So I told him, you can either answer some of my questions, you know, by paper, or excuse me, I said, or what you can do is if you want to give me a written statement about what your side of the story or whatever your feelings are now, you know, 40 some years later, I said, I'll put it out there, and I, you know, we'll just let people decide. I'm not going to play devil's advocate or anything, you know, we'll put it out there. So he did. He wrote me a 16-page letter or 16-page statement, and he included a letter from someone else that's going to be proved to be a little bit shocking, and we'll save that. But I had basically a friend of mine, to give it a different voice, read his statement for me, and that'll be on the next episode, and that should come out a lot faster than the last one did because I get sidetracked a lot.
Well, and they take a long time to put together also. I mean, they're not – there's a lot to it. So you're going to read all 16 pages of
– Yep, yeah. And it reads quite well. He's very very well-versed.
He's articulate, well. Yeah.
Articulate there. I'm not, but he is.
Yeah, you are. Stop it. You know, the thing is, listening to that recording, or at least part of it, I only got so far in it. Once he started talking about the torture, I stopped at that point, for the moment. I'm not, like, trying to be queasy or anything, but I do feel like I wasn't in the mood for that. Let's put it that way. What a strange recording up to that point, in the sense that he very matter-of-factly talked about what he did. He also then went on to explain what she was doing, which was panicking, screaming, threatening, you know, if you don't let me go, I'm going to have your job, I'm going to have this. And he would be like, then he would say stuff like, and rightly so, she should say that. You know, that's sort of like very well aware of, you know, what he did, where he was, why she you know, why she should be fearing him. And I thought, that's just it's actually a very surreal recording for me.
Yeah, you know, it's excuse me, it took me aback the first time I heard it. Yeah. And you're listening to this stuff, and I've also got a transcript of it in the case files.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to believe that excuse me, a human being is capable of some of those things.
Totally.
And I know you like to focus on the light, mm-hmm, of things, you know, even to the paranormal and everything like that. And we do need that. And however, like in cases like this, it's kind of a reality check, I figure. I don't want the shock value of it necessarily, but it's a little bit of a reality check, because some people I've worked with over the past few years and stuff have brought a lot of things into the light with human trafficking,
mm-hmm,
and things like that. And human trafficking to me has been one of the most neglected things in the criminal world. We know it's there. We mention it in the background. We'll have a commercial or two here, but nobody really goes after what's going on out there, and it's very, yeah, very scary.
No one's doing anything stuff, about it. Yeah, no one's doing anything about
this
it.
This takes place in our backyards. So it does get dark. I think it's going to lighten up a little as we go a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully people can take it for what it is. It's not meant to be a shock value, but, you know, it's the real world. And
I feel like your presentation of the material is very matter of fact. It's coming across. And I think this is where really good true crime material can really succeed at, is this is something that, quite frankly, we don't want to hear, but it does exist. You know, it exists a lot more than we think. That's why I feel like that this is. this is good information to know. This is good to know that this is stuff that does happen in Minnesota. We don't like it. We don't want it to be that way, but this is it. And sometimes it's okay to be interested in it. Doesn't mean we're murderers ourselves. We are interested, though, in what people do. And, you know, part of my question to you then, Joe, is, like, do you go into these, like, in some cases, like, what is your outcome that you want when you present, like, the entire season, where so everything is out there for someone to listen to?
Well, when I originally found this story, what I was hoping to do, I thought it was intriguing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of elements with this church he belonged to that kind of added extra kind of dimensions to this story. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do is, because it was bizarre, it was involved a state trooper. I mean, our most elite police office next to the BCA, or at least they think they're elite. Yeah.
And what is BCA? Because I meant to ask.
Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension.
Thank you. I should know that, but I don't know.
I'm being a little snarky, too, because they aren't. They're not very cooperative.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of intriguing stuff in this story. I ended up finding out about it researching one of my missing persons cases from the Detroit Lakes area. This trooper ended up moving to the Detroit Lakes area after this incident. So I kind of started researching cults and churches and found that with him. But I honestly thought it was a great story to tell, and I thought I could do it in like 2 or 3 episodes, give a nice lay out all, you know, all the interesting mm-hmm. details and stuff. But as I interviewed a few people and looked into it a little bit further, it looked, there's a lot more to the story. And you start seeing certain things that don't quite come together. And that's the photo I used for the newest episode, Solved or Resolved. That episode will kind of go into some of those details, and mm-hmm. the photo I used is a puzzle piece that doesn't quite fit. I thought that was kind of funny because my wife is obsessed with jigsaw puzzles, but making those pieces fit somehow. But I think if anyone has the patience to get through it, I think it's going to be very intriguing where this ends up at.
Well, and I think that, you know, the way to go through it is, you know, and you know, episode, you know, at a time. Don't, I mean, you know, people can certainly, if they want to do them all at once, it's great. But I mean, it's something to kind of savor in a sense, because I think once you get through one, you kind of want to think about it a little bit. You know, you want to kind of process what you've heard, and you start to formulate your own ideas and stuff. And you know, I think that people would, you know, should really enjoy going through it, because there is so much information. You're not skimping on anything, and I think that it's a very thorough look at these cases, which I mean, honestly, Joe, is this being talked about anywhere else? I mean, certainly back in the day in the 80s, sure, but since then, I mean, it's not something that is well known out there, is it?
Curious enough, when I went down to the sheriff's office in Faribault County, the woman in charge of the records department, and she goes, "Oh, there was a guy down here last week looking at this case, and he wanted me to give you his card." And it was from a production company, a true crime production company that they do Homicide Hunter and Snapped and a couple other ones.
Sure.
That were going to do a small town crime thing, and actually they had pulled this story up. I talked with the field producer a few times, and I kind of shared the podcast with them, but I have the feeling I'm going beyond where they want it to go. I mean, they're out there to tell a story in 49 minutes, you know, give all the details and sum it up.
Yeah.
So I don't know if and when that show is coming out at all, but that was kind of interesting, the fact that a week before me, this television producer was down there looking at the same stuff. So.
Yeah, absolutely, and that happens. Just as long as they don't steal all your research and start just going, you know, crazy on it, making their own stuff without any sort of credit to you, that would be horrible.
Well, I've had that happen in other things, which can be very annoying.
Yeah,
but yeah, I have the feeling where this podcast is taking that case to someplace they don't want to go.
That
so, I feel pretty safe about that one.
why don't we go ahead and do this? We're going to take our next break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about this podcast, other things Joe's working on. If you have any questions for Joe, put them in the comments, please. There's so much to talk about. It's awesome. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. And this week on Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken, we have a big week of guests. We have tomorrow night, we're going to have a very interesting conversation. We're having a look at the Patterson-Gimlin film. Those of you who know this film, they know it's the very famous 1967 Bigfoot film that sees a Bigfoot entity walking across the landscape. It's been made fun of many times over the years, but we have on Todd Gatewood tomorrow. We had some news about this film that no one knows about. He's been restoring this film. You might remember we had that conversation with M.K. Davis back in September. This is going to be very interesting, and it's going to be a lot of information coming out and a lot of looking at stuff that you may have not seen before. More than likely, you have not seen it before. Like I said, there's going to be news on that. Wednesday is the 60th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and we're going to be doing something a little bit different. A lot of people like to talk about the conspiracy theories, but we're going to bring on author Brian Dunning, and we're going to be talking about how this isn't a conspiracy theory. What happened isn't what people think. I'm not saying that that's necessarily what I'm going with, but Brian has put together an understanding of why this isn't a conspiracy theory. I'd love to get people's reaction to that. Thursday, one of my favorite programs, Doctor Who, it turned 60 as well. On the 22nd was JFK. On the 23rd in the UK was Doctor Who. I have guests, my good friends, Robert Franks, Michael Rogers. We're going to just be talking about the series celebrating its 60th anniversary. It's funny, we go from true crime to Doctor Who in the course of the week. Friday, Best of Ghost Box Radio, where we'll replay interviews with Moon Girl, Dream Interpretations, the book Witness to Roswell, and Alien Conversation with Michael J. Warden. It's going to be really a fantastic week, but we're starting it off with our great interview with Joe Kistner. We are talking about his podcast, Shadows of the Midwest, quite the exciting podcast, and it's quite the great interview here. Though Joe, I suspect we'll be putting your picture up that I grabbed from Facebook, and you're all in your badass mode there. I have a feeling you're not a fan of Doctor Who.
I loved the Tom Baker and Peter Davidson era.
Yeah,
me too. Tom Baker was just phenomenal.
Yeah,
that back in the day. They used to show it, KSTP and channel PBS would have it on there late nights, Friday nights, Saturday nights.
Yep.
And after that, I kind of disappeared, and I haven't really tried, but I haven't really gotten into the new era of Doctor Who at all. But the Tom Baker stuff is classic. I love that with Layla. And I was going to name my kid Adric.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But yeah, my ex didn't go for that one.
No. You know, I think she was wise in that decision. No offense.
Adric and Layla.
Oh, God, that'd be funny. All right, yeah. I'm sorry, not funny if it was your children's name.
Dog's canine. They didn't go for canine as my golden retriever either, but yeah.
Yeah, and if anyone has questions for Joe, please put them in the comments, but have questions in there, please, that actually are about what we're talking about tonight. We're having somebody putting in questions of that has nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight. So that's very interesting. A comment here, Bill Brown says, great job, Joe. It's so exciting to see all your efforts coming to fruition. Very interesting topic indeed. Yeah, it is very. I mean, I'm glad to see, first of all, that you're following a passion. You know, this is what you wanted to do. And you had telling me off air that you just kind of jumped into it, as from a production side, you just kind of jumped into it, and you weren't, you know, you've not done really anything with audio before.
No, it's just the free program off the internet type thing.
Yeah.
And then trying to, for anybody that's looking into stuff like that, trying to find a way to, it's one thing recording it, but then how do you distribute it? Mm-hmm. And there are ways of doing it. There's services that will get it out there to all those major podcast companies or platforms. So if you are looking for it because of that, if you search it, you can find it on Audible, Amazon, Google, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora.
Yep.
And then there's also www.shadowsofthemidwest.com, which basically right now only brings you to the episode page. I haven't been able to build any content or anything for that.
Are you going to consider doing like a Patreon or something?
Well, if things build up and progress, and it would be interesting, because right now I've been having a problem trying to find a way to share some of the documents involved with that. I do have a Facebook page, Shadows of the Midwest. If anybody would like to look there, I do post some things that documents that are pertinent to the story, where you can actually see it. I don't have any other outlet right now for doing that. But it would be great if you wanted to come visit that, like it, and leave a comment, questions, anything that suits your fancy there. And there's also a YouTube channel with the same name.
Yeah.
There's no production related to the YouTube videos. It's basically the podcast with a little squiggly line going through it.
That's good. Now, if I may say, I think if you ever do want to go down the Patreon route, and I'm sure your answer to me would be like, well, this stuff should be available to everybody. But, you know, as a way for people to view documents and stuff, to join Patreon for a couple bucks a month or something like that, you know, because, I mean, what you do, what I do is a lot of work. And it's a passion, yes, but it's also something that, you know, it's great to see people give the likes. They are very supportive and stuff. It's also great if someone could, you know, throw a couple bucks at you every month, and just to help things along. You know, if you're going to all these places to do the research and stuff, that's gas money. Sometimes if you're going down to, you know, the police office or police station or whatever, you know, those are things that add up after a while. And it's just nice to know that people, you know, appreciate that. Giving a couple bucks, you know, so something to think about if I were you, at least.
Yeah, and it would be a good way to put out documents where people could actually go and read transcripts and see the things you're referring to. Because in one of the episodes, I end up going back through, there's a lot of interview transcripts that I don't have audio for. So trying to present that, some of it's quite lengthy that I end up presenting excerpts, and you hear this guy go on. Sure. And then Bob said, you know, but to be able to have the chance to actually read those, it's a little more impactful when you can say that this guy isn't full of crap. It's like, that's actually what it says. So that would be a nice outlet for something like that. And then to add like little bonus contents and videos.
Totally.
And I'm hoping to do a little bit of that on the YouTube channel just for fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how time gets away from you though, isn't it? I mean, cause that's been one of my problems, because, I mean, my goal here is because if you go to my page, my website to listen to past episodes, it only puts up about 100 at a time. And now going nightly, you know, I'm in 2 months. In 2 months, I'm nearly at 100 and the other ones disappear. So I'm thinking about doing a Patreon where it's a couple bucks a month and you have access to the entire, including like the KCOR and the Para X and the stuff that I did with After Hours AM and stuff like that, where, you know, and that's the thing, you know, because you're building up, even, you know, and even when you're creating content, when you're creating the episodes, I'm sure there's stuff that you're cutting out that you're just like, it just doesn't fit anymore or anything. But then you upload those as bonus pieces of like, you know, here's a little bit more that we just didn't put in or something. So it's really, and it's amazing how people really do go for that. They really love that sort of, and loving the exclusivity of being able to listen to something that they know that it takes a little bit of effort to be able to partake in it as well.
And one thing I've been a patron of some Patreon, some podcasts as well. And the one thing is the affordability factor.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, there was times in my life where 10 bucks a month was, got a little tight, but you know, he could put content up there for $2 or $3 a month, so it's available for everyone who is interested, and then actually give them something to absorb.
And it's basically sustainability. And I'm quoting Chad, who runs the station. You know, when we were talking about sponsors for our show and whatever, and the local businesses are like, well, what, you know, we're not so sure. And I get it. Like you said, money is tight. Money is hard. But then some, not all, not even close to more, but there are a couple that want still to do some, like, can I be a guest? Can I do this? And it's like, yes, I'm not, you know, I want to support local businesses, but at the same time, you know, there needs to be sustainability on both sides. You know, this, you know, you have bills to pay for that are connected with the podcast. We have bills to pay to do the radio show, stuff like that. It's, you know, that's something that a lot of people get when you say it that way. Others are still just, you know, they have their own idea of how it works, and that's fine as well. So, yeah, I hope that you do go down that road, because knowing when I've been doing podcasts, and I had done one that was I haven't put out a new episode in a couple of years because it takes so long to put these together.
I know one person I reached out to involved with this case who I didn't think was going to be very cooperative to start with, but said, you know, you're out to make money and get rich off this stuff. And it's like, I just said, you might not want to talk to me, but trust me, it's a one-way street and it's outbound on the money.
Right. It's like, yeah. Cause we're not going to get enough Patreon members to, you know, buy our gold houses. Basically what it comes down to is just, it helps, you know, everything helps. It's no one's looking when they're doing these to expect everything to be paid for and to live a luxurious life. It's just to kind of help and know that there are some people who consider it very special what you're doing, and that they want to show it in a way of like $2 a month or something like that.
And encouragement is always wanted. Yeah. It does mean a lot. We're actually hoping that I'm trying to wrap this series up right now, this season, to start another podcast, maybe focused on my Minnesota Legend Hunter stuff.
That'd be nice.
That's a little more strange, bizarre, and a little easier to absorb, and a little more easy to write and produce for.
Right.
So, but, you know, we both do it for the love of it.
Yeah.
If you didn't love doing this and you didn't love the topic, you didn't love talking to people, you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't have done it for all these years.
Yeah. No, that's
and,
true.
I do appreciate what you do and what you've done, too, so.
And now, are you the only person, I mean, you're the only one that's putting it all together, right? Or do you have anyone else that's helping that's on a regular basis, like a staff or something?
This is all by myself. I have been working with, like I said, Dr. Eric Grabowski from North Dakota. We're going to kind of work on some other things together, some side projects, things that we both have an interest in. But right now, the Shadows of the Midwest has been something I do in my office that I share with the cats.
Your rag doll.
Oh yeah, my rag doll. Yeah, they all got locked out of the room right now. But
wise,
yeah.
Wise. Oh my gosh, that's right. I haven't even asked how your rag doll is. Mine is still a pain in the, you know.
Yeah. Oh, she's right at home, and she thinks she's a dog too. I think so.
They kind of do. Yeah. They kind of do. It's pretty amazing. Once again, folks, the podcast is called Shadows of the Midwest. You can get it anywhere that podcasts are available. That also includes YouTube. As Joe said, that it's also available on YouTube as well. And then Facebook page. That, once again, that's just called Shadows of the Midwest as well, right, Joe?
Yep, that's correct. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out there or through the YouTube channel or something. I'd love to get some feedback from you.
That, you know, and folks, I think you're going to really enjoy it. Joe Kistner, Shadows of the Midwest. What a great podcast. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Well, thank you, Greg. I really am honored, and I appreciate you having me on.
And I would really like to have you back on. We could talk about so much more.
That would be fantastic.
Thank you very much. And, folks, we'll be back tomorrow with talking about Bigfoot. It's going to be an incredible conversation. Hopefully some big news. Everyone, have a great night.